Welcome to the brand new sports podcast here on your station, from your station. This is KETR's Locker Room, the only sports cast for Northeast Texas. I'm Cooper Welch, one of your hosts, along with your other hosts, Ryan Billups and Taylor Phelps. We've also got our guest co-host with us, Tevin Godfrey. He's a sophomore receiver from the Lions football team, the A&M Commerce Lions football team. First up this week, we're going to talk with Tevin about his looks on the new athletic director, the new head coach for the A&M Commerce football team, his view on last season and this upcoming season. So, Tevin, first tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I come from a small town in Gilmer, Texas, football powerhouse, won state my senior year in high school, and just trying to keep the tradition going and bring some type of championship into this program.
All right. Well, as you know, as you're on the team, Lions didn't have that great of a season this last year. They went 1-9. They had a lot of good close games, a lot of games where they should have won, I think, really close. A few not-so-close games, but overall, not the best season. What do you think the new athletic director and the new head coach are going to do for the Lions next year?
For one, I mean, we have a great new athletic director and an awesome new head coach. He's very enthusiastic.
Right.
And just his energy alone, his passion for the game, have us fighting harder and have us fighting more and working harder. And hopefully we'll bring in some wins this season.
So now, I know he's hard on the recruiting trail. What type of players do you think he's out there looking for right now?
He's only looking for the best of the best right now.
What areas of Texas, like you said you're from Gilmer, mm-hmm. So is he looking mainly towards East Texas areas or North Texas like Dallas or even across the nation for maybe transfers?
He said he really wants to recruit heavy in East Texas to get this East Texas State University back going, and he mentioned a little bit about Dallas and the rural areas of Texas and mm-hmm. Houston. He said he's going to go from coast to coast.
Right. All right.
So let me ask you, Tevin, how quick of a turnaround do you see this team making? Do you see it? Do you see the coach coming in and having immediate impact? I mean, what are your predictions for this next upcoming season?
I expect an immediate turnaround. That's all we needed was a little direction. I mean, we had a great coach head more. I mean, we had a great head coaching guy Morris, but all we need was a little bit more direction. And Coach Carter is going to bring all the right people under him, and they're going to lead us to victory.
Okay. Are there any changes coming up this upcoming season, like a defensive change from, you know, like a 4-3 to a 3-4 or a Tampa 2? Because we know that Coach Carthel is a defensive specialist. He was the defensive coordinator at West Texas.
Right.
Is there any changes coming along this year?
As far as I was told, no.
Okay.
I'm going to keep running the smash mouth defense.
Right. Same system?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So not too much adjustment for you veteran players then?
No, sir.
Okay, cool. Anything else, guys?
I want to ask a quick question about one of your teammates. We talk about defensive-minded and Coach Carthel, and we see that Danny Mason has been invited to the 2013 Texas vs. the Nation All-Star Game.
Right.
And so what do you think about that as far as he was such a good defensive player for us last year? Do you think that is going to have an impact losing just him, or do you think we'll have enough core guys and enough new recruits to come in and be effective still?
It's all about being a gap soldier at that point. Danny Mason is a crucial piece to our defense and our team. He was a great leader. And it's all about someone stepping up, stepping into that gap, and taking the place and following his footsteps.
Very good.
All right. Is there anything else you can tell us about the new athletic director?
Yes. He's a real player pleaser. Like, he came in and had a meeting with us, and he took about 15, 20 minutes just to ask us, what do we want?
Okay.
And, like, most people, when they ask that, and a bunch of people throwing out suggestions and requests, and he actually listened. So that's what I noticed about him. He's very positive. He's in the stands at the basketball games trying to meet and greet people. So I like that about him.
Okay, well, I want to ask you a little bit of maybe a tougher question when we talk about last year and the type of season the Lions had. What do you think one of the primary problems was, and there's always problems on any team,
right,
and winning and losing can be such a small margin, and we know that definitely we were closer to winning last year than the previous years, but what do you think the primary issue was that Coach Carthel would be able to fix?
Preparation. It's just all about us being prepared And every time we looked at film, we were only 3 or 4 plays away from winning a game. And it's all about preparing yourself when times get tough and you can stick it out with your teammates and pull through with a win. Most importantly, like, I'll take the blame for not being a leader. Like, we didn't have enough leaders as well. So, especially on the offensive side. And I just got to give them my all, and hopefully my teammates will grasp upon it with me and we get this thing rolling.
Gotcha.
You have anything else, Billups?
Well, I was going to ask you, you mentioned the athletic director being a people pleaser and coming in and kind of asking y'all what y'all want. What were some of the things that the players wanted? Was it to stay the same, have a lot of the same things that y'all were already doing, or was it a whole new thing that they wanted?
A couple of players asked for a new coaching staff to come in and be able to adjust and relate to our generation and have a young, energetic coach come in and be enthusiastic. Somebody requested a East Texas State game, which is a throwback game. So we're looking into that, and he's got a lot of exciting things for his plan, so I'm looking forward to it.
Are there any other coaching changes coming with Coach Carthel coming here? Is he going to get rid of anybody?
Actually brought in 3 coaches already.
Okay.
And then what I've been told is he's looking for another OC.
Okay.
And he wants to run a high-octane showboat offense, so I'm excited about that.
That's good. So he's not totally – he's not a control type guy where he's controlling the team, but also he knows his role as defensive coach.
Right. As a head coach, I mean, I just feel like you should always have an OC or a DC
to
run that side of the ball.
Because you can't do it all. It's too hard to focus
on
both sides of the ball.
Right. All right. Well, we've got a little bit more time in this segment, so we're going to go a little bit off program. Taylor, let's talk a tiny bit about A&M Commerce basketball, because we want to stay with this segment, this A&M Commerce feel. So let's talk a little bit about that. I know it was a heartbreaking loss this last Saturday against Tarleton State, but you had a good win the previous week against – who was that against?
Eastern New Mexico, yes. I believe.
Eastern New Mexico. And you've also had big wins over Midwestern State, and there's another team really good.
First time we've beat Midwestern State
in a long time. Yeah.
And most of our losses have come from people in conference that are ahead of us in conference, so we have to chase them down, which we put ourselves at a disadvantage in having to get them the second time around, but we are about to start our trek in the 9 games of the second part of conference. Which conference is always tough. I mean, I was looking at Big East standings this week, and teams are 3-4, 3-4, 3-4, 6-2, 6-2. And it's just, conference is very difficult in college because there's not as many games, and everyone has talent, and everyone has the same goal. So I believe the standings could change tremendously throughout our next 9 games. And like Coach Walker was saying, he's told us that the biggest thing is getting into the conference tournament. Mm-hmm. Because when we get into the conference tournament, anyone can compete. Abilene beat someone by 30 the other day.
Right.
At home. And we beat Abilene at their place. So it's just the difference from the 10th seed to the number 1 seed could be 10 points, be the difference between making the tournament and not making the tournament. So, I mean, there's a lot to see in the next couple weeks.
Right. We've got upcoming games against Tarleton State at their home court right after the loss against them this last Saturday, so that'll be a tough game. Then you've got a doubleheader against Abilene Christian, Angelo State, Incarnate Word, a very good basketball program.
Very good.
Kingsville, Midwestern State, Cameron, West Texas A&M, and then to finish off the year, a little bit easier game at Eastern New Mexico.
At Eastern New Mexico. But still, even in this conference, at Eastern New Mexico
that's
is a tough game.
That's still a tough game,
And especially, that's one of the worst road trips. I know TD's been there before.
Yeah, Corvallis, New Mexico is a long ways away. All right, well, that's going to do it for our first segment, our local segment. Coming up next, we've got Super Bowl picks and why we picked them. Stay tuned to this podcast. KETR's Locker Room will be back in just a few moments.
Have you checked out our website recently? We invite you to visit and bookmark KETR.org. You can stay up to date on news stories from a local to an international level. Listen to archived audio from some of our locally produced programs, such as Mary Clark Traveler and Outdoors with Luke Clayton. Delve into playlists from programs like Notably Texan and Latin Soul. And it's easy to post your comments on our stories or share them online. Find it all at our website, KETR.org.
Welcome back to KETR's new sports podcast, KETR's Locker Room. I'm Cooper Welch. Here with me again is host Ryan Billups, Taylor Phelps, and our guest host, Tevin Godfrey. You heard earlier about Tevin Godfrey's view on the athletic director, the new head coach, the last season's somewhat disappointing end, but the upcoming hopes for this next season. But next, we're going into the Super Bowl picks, which is always something really important. The Super Bowl is only, what, 5-6 days away? It's on Sunday, February 3rd. It's going to be pretty awesome. The Harbaugh Bowl, as it's being called right now. It's going to be a pretty good game. So let's get our picks first from our guest host, Tevin Godfrey.
I'm going to be selecting the San Francisco 49ers.
Is there any reason behind that, or are you just a San Fran fan?
I mean, they're just a young team, and they play hard-nosed football. That's what I like about them.
I'm going to go away from that and say the Baltimore Ravens. I just think it's Joe Flacco's time, and many will disagree with me, but I think he has done things that are overshadowed by Ray Lewis's accomplishments as well as Ray Rice and them being veterans. But I think Baltimore's going to pull it out.
I'm going to agree with you, Taylor. I'm going to pick Baltimore as well, and it's not that I think they're a better team, but I think they're playing with a ton of emotion right now. I think they're the hot team right now. They came into playoffs hot, and you look at the Giants and some of the past winners, and they caught heat at the right time, and I think that's what we're dealing with right now with the Baltimore Ravens.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure who I'm going to pick. I think my gut feeling is the Ravens, but I would like for the Niners to win. I like the young team, like he said. They've got great receiving depth. Not too shabby on running back. Frank Gore's a good running back. Been one of my fantasy starters for a long time. But I think the edge has to go to the Ravens with the momentum they have going on, with Ray Lewis playing in his last game ever, no matter what. Something similar to this happened in the 2001 or 2005 Spurs championship, where David Robinson was playing his last season. And so the Spurs just caught momentum. Nobody thought they were going to win, and then they swept the New Jersey Nets, the Brooklyn Nets now. So I think that's a good demonstration. Basketball's a little bit different than football, obviously, but I think the Ravens are playing their hearts out because of Ray Lewis, because they want him to get that last Super Bowl ring, because he got the Ravens' only Super Bowl ring with them.
Yeah.
But it's going to be a close game either way.
Yeah, a lot of it's what you're playing for.
Yes.
I mean, and they have several. There's Ray Rice, too. He's playing for something. Joe Flacco is playing for a contract.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that sounds so not what you should be playing for is money, but that's part of it. Sports is a business.
Sports is a business. That's right.
He's trying to get that big contract. I was looking today, and a lot of people are saying he's not. He didn't put the numbers up that some people put. And I mean, when you've gone, he's made it to the playoffs almost every year, and he comes from Delaware.
Yes. That's the biggest thing for me. I think playoff and just win records in general is a much better indicator of how good your team is with you than stats.
You look at him, he's a winner.
Right.
I mean,
he's a winner.
Most people would say Tom Brady's a winner, and in their last two matchups, Flacco
has demolished him.
Give it that it's offense. They're both offensive players, but still, when you compare quarterbacks, the numbers are relatively similar, and he's defeated him the last two times. So,
and at the beginning of the season, Joe Flacco did say that he deserves to be one of the top five quarterbacks. He deserves to be in that echelon.
Yeah, so he believes in himself, too.
Yeah,
himself. Yeah, this isn't just someone up and coming like Kaepernick. He's had many seasons to prove what he's done.
And he made the playoffs his rookie year, too.
Yes.
He's been doing this consistently since the beginning. I think that, like as I was saying, playoff wins versus statistics. If we look at just raw statistics, Tony Romo, top five quarterback, yes. No matter what, no matter what you're talking about. But in playoff wins, he's got one win.
Yeah.
So, comparison there.
And what are you trying to buy? You're trying to buy a championship.
You're trying to buy a championship. You don't want good football teams. You want a winning
football team. Right. And that's what a lot of the talk with Peyton Manning's been lately is how, I mean, he's won less Super Bowls than Eli. And who would have said that 10 years ago or when Peyton came in the league?
When neither of them had a Super Bowl ring like just 7 years ago.
But you also have to look at the team around him. And I think Eli, in his time with the Giants, has had a far superior team than any team Peyton's been with, especially on the defensive side of the ball. So,
and which I look at the San Francisco 49ers and I say that I think they have the best team in the
NFL. They do have the best
team. When you look at player for player for player, it's ridiculous.
The only edge I would give them right now is running back, is to the Ravens as running back.
Yes.
So I think Ray Rice is a better running back than Frank Gore.
Yes.
But anything else, wide receivers, tight ends, defense, it all goes the Niners' direction. Quarterback, I think right now the momentum goes to Kaepernick. Backup quarterback Alex Smith is way better than Troy Smith, who's playing for the Ravens and who used to play for the Niners earlier, back when Mike Singletary was the coach. He was the third string. So I think the edge goes to the Niners in just sheer paperwork. On paper, the Niners win by a good 14, 15 points. But momentum-wise, I think the Ravens have this.
I think momentum, it's a close game. I mean, my score is like 24-21, like winning by a field goal. I think it'll be a field goal game. And I think it will come down to – it'll be an exciting Super Bowl. I don't think it will be a blowout or like the national championship game this year in college football.
Yes, yes.
I think it will be Flacco with the ball and trying to make a game-winning drive. And I think there will be a defensive touchdown by the ball. I think a defensive touchdown and turnovers by Baltimore could decide the game also.
All right. Well, you bring that up. Let's do projected scores, too. So we've already heard yours. You said 24-21.
24-21, 27-24, somewhere
like
in
that.
There. Yeah.
Ravens?
Ravens,
okay.
Yes.
How about you, Tevin?
31-24.
31-24, 49ers. Okay. How about you, Bill?
I'm with Tevin. I have it 31-24, but going Baltimore direction.
Okay. I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I'm going to say 28-14 Ravens. I think momentum's going to carry them. But that's what you do in this type of media. You make the outlandish proposition just to get some more.
And let's not put too much merit on momentum.
Right.
Granted, momentum is a huge huge deal in sports, but I mean, we're playing in the Super Bowl right here.
That's true. The Super
Both
Bowl
teams
is
are
the
going
big
to be
thing.
Incredibly motivated and ready to play. I mean, this is the most of these guys, and this is their first time at the Super Bowl. It's a, I mean, this is what they work for their whole life. So there's going to be plenty of trying out there. So we don't have to worry about that.
Okay. Well, here's a similar subject. We heard earlier this week that Terrell Suggs was talking about the NFL ending within the next three decades.
And even President Obama mentioned things about his children, his, thinking long and hard about
his supposed son, if he had a son. Yes. So since we've got Tevin here, let's talk a little bit about the new rules in football, like the new penalties for hitting a quarterback, defenseless receivers, things like that, penalties for that could hurt players, rules about not hitting them in certain places, things like that. What do you think about all the new rules?
Some of the rules I agree with, others I don't.
Okay.
It's all about player safety right now. And, I mean, back in the day, it was just hardcore football.
Right.
So, I mean, they're kind of making prima donnas out of certain players in the league. And, I mean, I like to feel protected when I'm in the air and open rib cage going up for a ball. But, I mean, it's football. That's what we signed up for in the fourth and fifth grade.
That's
it comes
true.
With injuries.
I'm glad we're getting to hear this from a receiver.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the rules are out there to help the receivers and the quarterbacks.
I mean, to protect them.
And I think that's one of the biggest ones I disagree with is the defenseless receiver. I think there is a point where they need to draw the line, but sometimes you see the receiver catch the ball and start to drop to the ground, and you have the defensive player hit head to head with the. And what are you supposed to do? The player ducked into
the momentum that's already happening.
You're going so fast, you can't just change the way. Yeah. If you try to go too low, I mean, it's just I think they've taken it too far in some aspects.
Okay. That's true, but I disagree. Football, we have to think of the type of people that are playing football now, and the how we have. I mean, there was a time when defensive linemen were 180 pounds.
Yes, that's true.
And you look now, and defensive linemen are 300, and they're not even the ones to fear. The ones to fear are the
linebackers,
the 250-pound people that run 4.4s mm-hmm. that can, I mean, destroy your body.
Wears.
And it's not just – it also has to do with the improvements on the offensive side of the game. Mm-hmm. We have receivers now that run 4.3, 4.4s, 40s, and when you have two – when you have fours hitting those – people like that, and with pads on, a lot of people say pads are there for protection. Pads increase the blow because it makes you feel defenseless. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a difference from rugby and football, and in football, you're going to hit harder because you feel... I mean, Tevin can vouch when you say that you might not feel invincible out there, but pads do, to a certain degree, do they not make you feel more protected and able to hit harder? And
yeah, I agree. I just... Like, when I say I got pads on, well, you're scared to hit somebody before you got pads on. So,
right.
Yeah. Kind of give you that extra confidence. And, I mean, like you said, it increases the blow.
Yeah.
Because you feel like you can hit anything or run through a wall.
And when you're stronger, I mean, the players are just stronger now. You have, I mean, just recently we hired a strength and conditioning coach.
Right.
I mean, you can see improvements in our own player strength. And just sports is becoming a world of incredible athletes, and athletes are only going to get better. So we say, Terrell Suggs says in 30 years the NFL won't exist. What are the people going to look like in 30 years? I mean, if you look at our NFL players 30 years ago, they don't look like the players now.
No.
Right. So, and it's not that they didn't have the ability. It's not that those players of old are not as good as the players now. They're just, if they had grown up in this time, they would be the same. They would probably have the same physiques as the players now. But
the technology that we have, the medicine that we have now, it's a much different game, the equipment we have. But going back to that question, do you agree with Terrell Suggs? Do you think, due to just the rule changes, just by that self, do you think fans are going to get frustrated and not watch the game anymore? What do you think?
Somewhat. Okay. I agree. Okay. But I want this game to live forever.
Right.
That's true. And someone said, I forgot who it was this week recently, but they said that the next step in football is a death.
It's to death.
That
okay.
The next, that we've already had concussions. We've already had players become paralyzed mm-hmm. in college and NFL. But what's the next step? When is it too far?
Right.
When do you reach the point where if a player dies, I mean, what's going to happen? I mean, that's a lot to think about. And where do we hold commissioners like Roger Goodell responsible for those mm-hmm. deaths? Mm-hmm. Like, we have player associations, and what do they say when a player comes out? And they're a lot of the ones instigating the rule changes.
Right.
Now, let's not say that the players are frustrated about this, because maybe some of the defensive ones are, because they feel like, oh, I'm being fined mm-hmm. for things I'm not trying to do, and I've always learned. The problem is the youth, too. Where these kids grew up in a time where hitting, I'm sure when Tevin was learned to hit as hard as you can in high school. I know East Texas football, Gilmer High School.
Right.
I mean, that's really good football.
Yeah.
And they're not taught the same way these NFL players are, because those kids, while they are very athletic, while they're not NFL players. They're not 250 pounds, 4.3, 4.4. So when they're taught the way to hit in high school and the way to play the game of football in high school, it changes when you're in college and when you're in the NFL. And when you're playing other players just as big as you, there's much greater risk for injury. And we have a death, if we have multiple deaths, I mean, what's going to happen? You don't know what's going to happen to the game, and who's going to step in to stop it, and who's held responsible.
Yeah. All right, that's pretty good discussion. But we've been on this for a while. Let's move on to another related topic in the NFL. We've all heard about Jay Ratliff being pulled over and arrested for drunken driving while intoxicated. And this comes out just a few months after the recent dilemma with Josh Brent and killing his best friend in that accident. Mm. So let's talk a little bit about Jay Ratliff, what this means for the Cowboys, whether or not he's going to stay with them. So what are your thoughts?
I really feel like I'm just now turning 21 today.
Right.
So I really feel like as an NFL player that you make that much money, mm-hmm. it wouldn't hurt you to pay somebody $100 to drive you around for a night just so you can go out and enjoy yourself. It wouldn't be that hard. You got to put your pride to the side and have somebody drive for you.
Yeah, and the teams actually pay people to drive you. They have like the Cowboys, yeah. I know for sure, have people allotted to go with you whenever you go to party. That's their whole job, is to go with you when you party. So that's a very good point.
I think Jay Ratliff, absolutely idiotic in this this scenario. Josh Brent, the whole incident, the whole thing that happened there, killing his teammate, that happened, what, December 8th? Mm-hmm. That happened, I mean, just a month ago.
Yeah.
And he's going to go out there and get in a DWI accident is just inexcusable.
It's a little
and
disrespectful.
Idiotic. And disrespectful, yeah, to sit at his funeral and cry and then turn right around a month later and... I mean, if you're not going to learn from a death of a teammate, you're just not going to learn.
And Tevin makes such a good point, and they have so much money.
Yes.
There's, I mean, they can afford a limo to go out and party if they wanted to. I mean, let's not look at, okay, maybe we can judge his partying, but let's not judge his partying as much as his decision-making.
Yes.
And the solutions to the problem. I mean, this is a problem for the Cowboys in trying to make changes to mm-hmm. make a better team. This is a problem. And I don't see how you can keep a guy around in the locker room who's going to do things like that.
Yeah, and this
is they need to make a firm statement about this, that this is not how we're going to run our organization.
Right, and this isn't the first problem that the Cowboys have had with Jay Ratliff either. We saw him on the sidelines arguing with Jerry Jones.
Oh, yelling at him.
Yeah, I mean that's
cussing him out.
That's not something you do as a player to the owner. I know that everyone's frustrated with Jerry Jones. We feel like coaching changes need to be made. We feel like There's a reason that the Cowboys haven't got to the playoffs recently, and that's Jerry Jones. But even if you're frustrated with your boss, you don't cuss him out. Just
yes.
because you're making millions of dollars from him and because you're a star athlete, you still have to have respect for certain people.
And here's the deal. Jason Garrett talks about having his right kind of guys right. all the time. You hear it repeatedly. I'm trying to build this program, have the right kind of guys, have my guys in here. Here's a perfect example of where Garrett could step up and show his team, make an example out of Jay Ratliff,
and cut him right now.
But the problem is, where does Jason Garrett's jurisdiction begin
mm-hmm.
and Jerry Jones ends?
And that's the problem about having your owner be the GM of the football
yes,
team.
Yes, exactly.
I saw recently on ESPN that they want the Player Association to consider making DWIs, the penalty for DWIs, being an immediate cut, no matter what the actions are, no matter if they didn't wreck in anything or cause any injuries to anyone, which, by the way, Jay Ratliff did. He didn't cause injuries, but he did crash into a semi-truck.
18-wheeler yeah. hit the side of it, yeah.
Yeah, so he did cause a wreck, too. It wasn't just him drinking and driving, which yes. just by itself is despicable. He did it and caused a wreck, which could have cost a life, as we saw
exactly.
with Josh Brent. All right. Well, that's that covered a little bit. Let's talk a little bit more Cowboys. Recently, Jerry Jones took away some of Jason Garrett's coaching duties. He took away the offensive play calling duties, which is what he was hired for before Wade Phillips being hired as head coach, just for offensive calling. So what do you guys think about his responsibilities being taken away? Tevin?
I mean, I really don't have a say-so in it.
Okay.
So, I mean, I'm not even a Cowboys fan, to say
okay.
the least.
What are you a fan of?
Who are you a fan of?
I mean, I don't have a favorite football team.
Okay.
I have favorite players, so okay. I'm here and there. So,
who's your favorite player?
Right now in the league, Anquan Boldin.
Ah, okay. He's a good guy.
Yeah.
And I always looked up to Hines Ward growing up, tried to base my
yeah.
game off him.
Receiver, yeah. You base
yeah,
your game off someone.
Too.
But, I mean, as the Cowboys, he took his privilege away. Like, sooner or later, man, it's going to get really ugly.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody's
yeah.
going to have to step in
yeah,
and take responsibility.
That's the thing. Like, I don't know. Everyone loved Jason Garrett when he was offensive coordinator.
That's true.
And that's how he became. I think people forget that's how he became the head coach of the Cowboys. Everyone went, oh, we need Jason Garrett. We need Jason Garrett.
Mm-hmm.
He becomes the head coach, and everyone turns against him.
Right.
Because he's in control. Maybe it's Jason Garrett can't handle all of it. Maybe there's too much going on. And when you're the head coach, there's a lot to plan for besides just offense and defense.
Besides play calling.
Yeah, there's a lot of play calling. So maybe his play calling has, you know, been limited by maybe they need an offensive coordinator and a defensive coordinator, and maybe then Jason Garrett can oversee a more, maybe become, I heard something recently about him maybe becoming the special teams coach.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe he doesn't know much about special teams, I don't know, but he's certainly a good mind.
Right.
And a good football mind.
And he'll know enough about special teams because
yeah.
he's been coaching in the NFL.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
You don't not know how to coach special teams.
Yeah, offensive coordinators know plenty about defense.
Yes.
I mean, they study that
yeah.
as part of
right.
their game plan.
We haven't heard anything from you, Bill.
Jerry Jones came out and said that this was something they talked about and that they decided together. And right. I think that's total crap. There's
a bold-faced lie.
Absolutely right. No way Jason Garrett wanted this to happen.
Right.
Most people, and I'm one of them, think that this is probably Jason Garrett's last season as the Cowboys coach unless they make a playoff push.
Unless they make the playoffs. Even.
Right. And so if they don't have a significant increase in their in how they play this season, I think he's gone. And so there's, if you're in that kind of situation as a head coach, why would you give the play calling duties to someone else? Why would you put your job's lifeline into someone else's hand? Mm-hmm. So I think that was just a bold-faced lie, and this is just Jerry Jones taking a little bit more power away from Jason Garrett right before he cuts him.
And how much trust do the players have now in Garrett? Mm-hmm. You take away, this is like, I mean, this would be like our athletic director with the new coach Carthel saying, "Oh, you're not doing defense anymore."
Immediately,
you're taking things away from him, and so they're like, "Well, who's actually in charge here? Maybe you don't have as much power as we thought you did." And I mean, everyone, and it only increases it with Jerry Jones. Jerry Jones only makes that look worse.
Yeah. I think something to remember here, though, is that everyone's like, "Okay, so where did this come from? Why are we having problems now?" You said maybe it's because the head coaching difficulties and duties that come with that, maybe that's limited his play calling. Well, let's look back to when he was with Wade Phillips. Even then, the offense struggled. And we said, oh, it's Wade Phillips. It's Wade Phillips' fault. We've got to get rid of Wade Phillips. But look at who was calling the plays even when Wade Phillips was around. Wade Phillips was always a defensive guy. Yeah. He always was the defensive coordinator. And yes, the defense was terrible back when Wade Phillips was around too. But the offense wasn't that great. And we could say, oh, it's because X player didn't do good. Tony Romo, you know, dropped that field goal, potential game-winning field goal against Seattle, or he threw five interceptions in this game.
We've always had excuses.
Like that.
And that's why you don't know where the problems come, because everyone's pointing fingers at each other.
Yeah.
Right. Pointing fingers at Jason Garrett. Mm-hmm. Jerry, all the players are Jerry Jones, Jason Garrett. I mean, and then Tony Romo has a great game. We win and everyone's happy. Oh, the problem's been fixed. No, the problem hasn't been fixed. Someone just had a good game.
Well, you're absolutely right. The pointing fingers is a huge problem. Look at this offseason, for instance. Jason Garrett does pretty much a horrible job all season long. And who gets fired at the end of the season?
Rob Ryan. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just a situation where they looked at it and they were like, well, we're not ready to get rid of Jason Garrett, and someone's head has to go.
Yes, exactly.
And I don't think Rob Ryan did a bad job at all. I think he took over the worst defense in the league. And I think they finished 18th overall in defense this year, which, you know, isn't horrible when you look at, I mean, DeMarcus Ware, Sean Lee, Victor Butler, Jason Hatler, Ray Lapp, Jay Ratliff, Alex Albright, Josh Brent. I mean, we lost an incredible number of players to injury, and he still finished the season at 18th overall in defense.
Yeah.
All right, let's get off this real quick. And you brought up Rob Ryan no longer being the coach of the Dallas Cowboys defense. The new hiring is Monte Kiffin. Real quickly, we just heard that Rob Ryan will not be the St. Louis Rams defensive coordinator. They said that he's not going to be their coordinator either. So that's just a side note. But we're going to talk very quickly. We've only got a few minutes left in the segment. Let's talk Marinelli being hired as a D-line coach and Monte Kiffin being hired as the defensive coordinator.
I think Marinelli is just a Monte Kiffin guy. Marinelli ran the Chicago Bears defense, which was also a Tampa 2 defense. I think they were the fifth overall best defense last year, and Marinelli was the defensive coordinator of it. Mm-hmm. And so I think Kiffin comes in, he's going to run the Tampa 2 system, and he brought Marinelli in him to run the D-line to help him with that Tampa 2 system.
And they've coached together before.
And they've coached, they have a history, and so I expect good things out of the Cowboys' defense next year.
The biggest thing is the Tampa 2, we needed to force turnovers like it's supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And I think we have the players to force turnovers, but we haven't been doing it because we've been in the 4-3 more of like a let's stop them. Let's make them make a mistake before
we force
a mistake.
Right.
And we need those turnovers forced because we have been just terrible in turnovers. And we have players like DeMarcus Ware who can help make those turnovers forced, putting pressure on the quarterback.
Well, yeah, we were fourth worst in the league last year in forcing turnovers. Yes. And that's kind of what the Tampa 2 is supposed to do. You look at the Bears, they had 44 forced turnovers last year, which was, I think, fourth in the league, maybe?
Yeah.
And we got to make sure – we get the coaches to fit our players.
That's
Jim Harbaugh
true.
Fits San Francisco perfect. Mm-hmm. John Harbaugh fits Baltimore perfect. And that's why they're winning, because it all works together. There's chemistry between everyone, and the players fit the system. Not just getting – Jerry Jones just doesn't need to get the most high-profile guys mm-hmm. or guys that he thinks will work. It needs to be, who are our players? Who are we targeting? Let's get them to come fit it to our players, not the other way around.
That's very true. You got anything, Tevin?
No, sir. Okay. I touched all the points.
That's all right. All right, we're going to go into our next one-minute break, and then we'll be right back. You're listening to the brand-new sports podcast from KETR, KETR's Locker Room.
I'm the host of Latin Soul, David Herbaz. Join me on Tuesday night for a show that will spice up your life with selections of jazz and soul and more in a Latin style. Latin Soul, Tuesday night at 9, only on 88.9 KETR.
You're listening to KETR's brand new sports podcast, KETR's Locker Room. I'm Cooper Welch, one of the hosts, along with Ryan Billups and Taylor Phelps. Sadly, our guest host, Tevin Godfrey, had to leave. He had to go to class. That's right, folks. We're all students here at A&M Commerce. We're all in class, but we're going to try to stay with you the full hour. So, up next on our discussion, Nelson Cruz caught at a clinic that has a history of PED use. Their clients include Alex Rodriguez, also Melky Cabrera, who's already this season faced a year-long suspension for using performance-enhancing drugs. So let's talk a little bit about what this means for Nelson Cruz.
I think it's a real disappointment to see the headlines this morning and see Nelson Cruz on that list. I think a lot of the players on the team came out and they were very surprised as well. I think there's no way he doesn't face a 50-game suspension because of this. You don't have to be caught using drugs. All they have to do is prove that this story is true, and they'll hand the suspension to him. So where does that leave the Rangers for the season without a right fielder?
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah, very tough on the Rangers.
Yeah, and I mean, we've already not off the field problems, but we've had a few on the field problems with Nelson Cruz. Obviously, his big mess up was the catch that he missed in the World Series. That was literally feet from having us have our first World Series ever.
Wish he was using PEDs then.
Yes, maybe he was. But okay, let's talk. And then see, he had some other mistakes this year. Like, he was very cold at the wrong times.
Right.
He couldn't hit at the right times, which is really the problems for all the Rangers. I think that was
the story of our season
last year. But let's talk. Evidence maybe that Nelson Cruz was PEDs. You talked to me earlier today about you had some stats that maybe pointed to that.
Well, you look at Nelson's stats and you look at his 2006 season where he had, six home runs. His 2007, he had 9. 2008, he had 7. All of a sudden, 2009, he has 33 home runs. 2010, 22. 2011, 29. And then last year, he had 24. You don't just make a jump like that.
Even look at his stolen bases.
I mean, just you look at his all around.
Even his stolen bases in 09 went up to
all around stats.
3 to 20 in a year.
He just huge jumps. That just doesn't happen in an offseason. Right.
Except for the Toronto player who's just went crazy the last 2 years, had the home run records. Well, not records, but the home runs total, highest home run totals the last 2 years. Who was that?
I don't remember. Well, and that's the problem with baseball now is. Who knows if he was using?
Yeah, who's doing it the right way?
I mean, it seems like
if anyone is.
It seems like everybody's guilty until proven innocent. Almost now.
And I want to bring up a point that is totally unrelated to baseball, but performance enhancing drugs. Period, is Lance Armstrong. And one thing he said the other day in his interview with Oprah was, he does not think he could have won any Tour de France's without the use of performance enhancing drugs. So is it getting to that point in baseball too? Is baseball becoming a sport where I can't compete without performance enhancing drugs? Is performance enhancing drugs helping me feed my family? Because that's what's getting my career to the point where I'm, you know, making a living in professional baseball and not having to be in the minor leagues anymore. And I mean, even these players who are having careers like Nelson Cruz, but his bump, think of the money that the difference in those numbers will bring you when free agency comes. It's a huge difference.
When you look at, you say PEDs and everybody, you know, everybody's using them now, and you look at Lance Armstrong, when they tried to give his trophy to the second place guy, they couldn't do it. They had to go to down, like, they had to give it to the,
yes.
I think it was like the 8th or 9th or 10th place finisher, because mm-hmm. every
right.
single one had, since those times, had some kind of...
And performance enhancing drugs are so hard to catch. It's not
yes.
like
yeah, very
just
true.
Going and, you know, taking a urine sample and analyzing it. It's a lot of detailed test over and over and over again.
And there's also such a possibility of a false positive, too.
Yes.
And that's why players don't want the automatic suspension and automatic cuts from teams to be a thing. That's why they haven't allowed that to be a rule so far, because there's such a hazard of it false positive. Like in high school, you know, if you eat a poppy seed bagel or muffin
yes.
before a drug test, you're going to get caught for OFIAs, as they'll say what you're doing,
yes.
even though you aren't even taking drugs, usually.
That's right.
But
the false pauses are a problem, too.
Yes, that's a problem.
Yeah.
So let me ask you guys. Let's say it was legal, or let's say it wasn't legal, but let's say there weren't really suspensions and as heavy as fines, and let's say it wasn't, their name wasn't tarnished so badly when it happened,
right.
but maybe they still got fined and suspended. If y'all had to choose, would you want your players to use? Would you want certain players to use performance enhancing drugs?
Okay, we had this discussion a long time ago. You and I did.
When
we were outside of the country in Mexico. we had a lot of interesting discussions then. But I think the point that we made was that yeah. We want our players to be the absolute best they can be.
Because it's the entertainment value.
And because it's a business, and you want, in business, you want
yes.
the spectacle, you want the drama. And if you don't have those PEDs, the records, the numbers are going to slide way down. Not that any of us are going for...
Condoning it.
Yes,
but
performance enhancing drugs. But, by the way, definitely, KETR, none of us are by any way condoning performance-enhancing drugs. They are not a good thing.
But in the scenario where
but
they're
in
legal.
In the scenario where they're legal and everyone is doing it.
Then I want...
Then
yes,
you,
I do
yes.
not want my players at a disadvantage.
Well,
if I'm trying to win a championship as a general manager of a baseball team, I do not want my players at a disadvantage mm-hmm. to the Houston Astros or the San Francisco Giants. I want to be just as competitive. And that's the point that Lance Armstrong makes. Completely different sport, but all the same,
mm-hmm.
I can't compete. A lot of these baseball players, this is my career. Mm-hmm. I don't have a college education. I don't have a career to build on. I don't have a trade. This mm-hmm. is what I do, and this is the money I'm trying to make to sustain me for a long time. If you cut one of these players, where are they going to end up? Where are they
right.
going to end up working? What are they going to do? And they don't know.
Yeah, and that's another thing that we have to talk about is this isn't the only problem in sports. We've also got the one and done in NCAA basketball. We've got other rules like that. But I think performance-enhancing drugs are the biggest problem in sports right now. I think they're the thing that we need
yes.
to figure out next. Like, okay, so if we said maybe one day they're legal and called for in professional sports, that means next thing up is college sports. Do we want our college kids kids our age doing.
That's a business now too.
Right.
I mean, college has become
a business.
And then
even further than that, do we want them used in high school? Because we know that if it becomes the thing to do in professional sports, kids that look up to athletes are going to say, I want to be that guy. I want to do the same things he's doing, so I'm going to destroy my body.
Or I need to start earlier. I need to start earlier in this so that I can get to the NFL.
Yes.
People
so,
start looking at that. Mm-hmm. So where do you draw the line? Where does it begin? And who's monitoring all this?
And there is a small number of people who like the old school baseball where it's a pitcher's duel.
Right.
But for the most part, most people who watch baseball want to see
the home run.
They want home runs.
You want to see a 10-8 score or a 14-10 score. You don't want to see a 1-0 or
why
a
does
1-1.
Soccer not catch on in this country? Because there's no scoring.
Right.
Baseball's the same way.
Just
people
not as
want
much
to
action.
See people scoring.
Although,
look at the NFL. Look at the increase in scores
right.
over the years.
It's just gone way up.
Yeah.
But I really do think that if the drug use was really to be pulled back all the way, no one used it. No one did anything. I think pitchers, too, I think it would all come down. I think there's pitchers using drugs
Absolutely.
Just as much as
oh,
other
yeah,
athletes.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think all the numbers would be affected by that. We'd have a much cleaner, much purer game. And really, if you think about it, for me, I would much rather see a perfect game by a pitcher than somebody hit a home run, because a home run is such a common thing now.
But perfect game is not.
I mean, granted, sitting through 9 innings and then somebody missing the perfect game. Yeah, I don't want to see that.
That's horrible.
Yeah.
If they get the perfect
game. If they don't get it, though,
you just wasted
your time. So think about how incredible a perfect game is now in today's, baseball game.
It makes it that much,
yes.
But maybe the pitcher's using performance-enhancing drugs, too, and it's not as
true.
Incredible
so
as
and see, and
it.
That's the thing, is even though steroid use is so pervasive in the hitting side of baseball, I think it's just as pervasive on the other side, because there's a pitcher on that same list with Nelson Cruz and the others. But also, not only have the home run numbers gone up significantly since the early 90s, the perfect games have gone up a lot, too. We had several within 1 year. We had old Roy Halladay and a bunch of others throwing perfect games from out of nowhere. That Dallas Braden kid who, a week earlier had been freaking out at A-Rod for running across his pitcher's mound. The next week, he's throwing a perfect game, and that's the only good game he's had his entire career. Like,
and what if we ban them?
From?
What
yeah.
if we ban them? Then who is our market of players?
Right.
Who's to say these minor league players that aren't even in the majors aren't using them?
Mm-hmm.
The whole Major League Baseball will just be...
Oh,
there'll be
it goes
so
all the way down to
out.
The high school level.
Right.
It goes
yes.
all... There are high school players right now
and
who
and
are
now
using
now you have club baseball.
Drugs.
What are their coaches telling them? What are the club baseball coaches telling
right.
them? Hey, you use this, that'll increase your career. You're going to get looked at by this school mm-hmm. or this college, or you're going to get looked at by this team. So there's a lot of pressure being put on kids, too,
pressure.
At a young age. And let's not forget, these minor league players are only... They're as old as us. They're 19, 18,
20, 21.
Jerickson Profar is 19 years old.
That's right. So, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of pressure being put on very young people.
All right. So that's about all we can fit in on that part of it. Let's talk a little bit more Rangers, though, very quickly. I also want to mention, by the way, Jose Bautista is the player I was trying to think of on the Toronto Blue Jays.
Jose
Bautista, he went from 14 and 15 home runs just a few seasons ago to 53 2 years ago, 43 1 year ago, and then this last season, 27 home runs.
And that doesn't just happen
that's
naturally.
That's a huge increase.
It doesn't.
But let's not point any fingers here yet.
Fingers are
yet.
Pointed.
So let's keep moving before we get in too much trouble. Let's talk who's going to replace Nelson Cruz. That's a big problem. We've already lost Josh Hamilton. We've already lost Mike Napoli. We've lost a lot of pitching. So what are the Rangers going to do now? They've lost Nelson Cruz, too. That's another huge blow this offseason. So who's coming next?
Aren't the Rangers upset that they didn't go out and get Justin Upton now? I mean, they passed on him, and I mean, that was when we thought we were going to have Cruz, and man, that is just backfiring now. Another guy that's still out there is Giancarlo Stanton.
We'd love to have.
Love to have him. He's a 23-year-old right fielder, real young guy, 71 home runs in the last two seasons. Hits like 280 or so. He is kind of a guy like Josh Hamilton, though, where it's kind of home run or bust.
Mm-hmm.
I think he had a 48% strikeout rate
Just terrible.
On two strike pitches. Who does that sound like to you? Josh Hamilton.
Like Josh Hamilton.
Last year, Stanton had a 28% strikeout rate. Hamilton had a 25.5% strikeout rate.
Right.
So if you were frustrated with Hamilton last year,
you'd really get frustrated.
You're going to really be frustrated with Stanton. But he's a young guy. That's pretty common with young
guys. I mean, you don't know how he's going to develop.
Exactly. And he's under contract for several years. Right. That's the thing we need, is we need people under contract.
Right. Plate discipline is learned over years.
Right.
So that we have a young player who,
he's worth the risk.
If they get good, he's worth the risk, and has trade value.
Right.
There's so many things that go into having someone that's a young player.
Right.
Especially, I mean, it might disappoint Rangers fans, but especially if we're not really in the running for a championship right now.
Very
so,
true. All right, so we've got just about a minute left in this segment. We got to go quick. So who would you trade for him really quick?
If I had a trade right now, a little less lucrative offer, obviously I'd go for Stanton, but more realistically I'd probably go for Michael Bourne. He's a guy, hits like 270, 275, but he is an absolute base stealer since 2008. Right. He has 257 stolen bases, which just absolutely demolishes anybody else over
that's
that
more
time
than
period.
The Rangers
something
over this,
that the Rangers
and that's something
Rangers,
we need. We could put him at the front of the lineup.
That's
Rangers who I would being a heavy hitting team recently, maybe that speed, maybe speed and young people is what we need to rebuild.
The
and it is a rebuilding.
System.
We are in a rebuilding
and
situation.
He's a little bit more realistic of a grab
definitely.
Than a 23-year-old prospect as good as him.
All right, well, we've only got one segment left, folks. We're going to talk a little bit of Mavs basketball. We don't have too much time left. So here we go, another quick break. This is KETR's Locker Room.
In a world overrun by formulaic, cookie-cutter, predictable radio stations, there remains one radio refuge where you can still find hand-picked, eclectic playlists featuring artists from all around the great state of Texas. With the genre barriers torn down, we can bring you an incredible mixture of music unrivaled in Northeast Texas. Notably Texan, starring The Music of Texas, featuring Matt Minky, tonight at 6 on KETR.
Listening to KETR's brand new podcast, KETR's Locker Room. I'm Cooper Welch. With me for this final segment are our hosts, Taylor Phelps and Ryan Phillips. I combined their last names there. All right, so let's very quickly talk about Mavs trade opportunities.
There's so many to talk about. And the Mavs need something. We know they need something. But do they need it now? Is it a necessity right now? Is Dwight Howard, people talking about Dwight Howard, Pau Gasol, and different situations, Rudy Gay and whatnot.
Well, let me ask you, Taylor, if you were the Mavs, if you're Mark Cuban right now, and let's say those trade possibilities are out there, what do you do?
If I am Mark Cuban right now, I honestly think I do nothing. I think... I don't want to say I still have faith in Rick Carlisle. Rick Carlisle is not the problem. Rick Carlisle's making it
and
work.
It's not like this season's over. Absolutely turned it around.
When Dirk came back,
we're rising.
And Dirk's
right now.
Not even playing well.
If we can make the playoffs, we can do something.
Yeah, and I don't even know. I'm a huge Mavs fan, and you know the championship was great. All that was great, but I'm not even sure I want us to make the playoffs. I'm not even sure. I do for free agency reasons. But I think we have the money to lure people in.
Right.
And we have, you know, we don't have a state income tax and all that. So that's going to help with people wanting to come here, their money. So I don't think I do anything, really. I wait it out. I kind of let, it sounds bad, but I just wait and see what happens.
Right.
And then I wait and see about OJ and Collison and Brand and all of them. I don't think we need Elton Brand back. I do think that's one that was a bust. But I think if you want to take a positive light into this, we found who we don't need and who we think maybe can help us. Maybe
that's
Darren
true.
Collison can help us. I think Collison's our best prospect.
Or O.J. Mayo.
Or O.J. Mayo. O.J. could help. But O.J.'s had a little bit of a falling out now that he's not the star.
Right.
But maybe that's because he hasn't had enough time to adjust to Dirk's game. And and Dirk hasn't been playing like Dirk. Let's not say he has, because he hasn't. Our problem is still defense. We're ninth in the league in scoring. I mean, we score 100 points a game. Out of all the teams in the NBA, with the Heat, the Clippers, the Thunder, even the Lakers can score.
Yeah.
The problem is defense. So why would we take a Laker to help our defense? We don't need that. I mean, our scoring is fine with Vince and Chris Kaman. Yeah.
Dwight Howard has been the defensive player of the year for a very long time.
But I'm not sure now that Dwight hasn't hurt his stock. I think his off-the-court problems and his in-the-locker-room problems hurt him a lot more than people realize that aren't on the inside.
Right.
I'm going to take a different approach than Taylor took. I think if you have the ability to trade for Dwight Howard right now, you do it. I think he is a once-a-generation type guy.
Right.
Just absolutely dominant in his
position.
That
is true.
Obviously, he's had some trouble with L.A. He's coming off injury. But he's getting better and better as he's meshing with that team, and he doesn't really fit in there.
And maybe
offense.
He just doesn't fit
there, to be honest with you. I'd take him. I'd put him. I mean, he's one of the best defensive players in the league. We had Tyson Chandler, and look what our team did. Imagine having Dwight Howard on that team. I mean, just
But I think offensively, Dwight's different than Chandler. I think offensively, Dwight doesn't want to be a pick-and-roll dunk guy. I think he wants, back to the basket, give me the ball. I'm the dominant player on the floor, and we know.
And I'd give it
as
to
long
him.
As Dirk is in Dallas.
Give it to him.
As long as Dirk is in Dallas,
he's the man.
Cuban said that, and I know Dirk feels. I don't think Dirk wants that, and I think Dirk's a very unselfish guy. But
he wants the ball.
I think he wants the ball, and he wants the ball
Dirk.
On that block. He wants the ball on that block, and he wants it at the elbow, and he's going to get in the way of Howard, kind of,
right.
Just like Pau Gasol wants the ball on the block, and though Pau and Dirk's games are different, they're still in the same area of the floor. You got to think of spacing.
Right. But you look at Dirk right now, and he's playing a lot more passive than he has in past years. And maybe it's because he's coming off injury or whatever reason, but he is giving the ball up a lot
more than he used to.
And I think at this point in his career, he would welcome a guy like Dwight Howard to come in, a superstar, to take some of the load off his shoulders, maybe get another championship while he's in Dallas.
And Rudy Gay's available too, so you never know what's going to happen.
You never know.
But I don't think we need to trade.
I think it's Dwight Howard or we sit it out and wait until the offseason.
All right. I got two very big, real quick. Dwight Howard will be a free agent this next summer. So would you trade for him now or wait till the summer? And that's very quick.
If I could, I would trade for him now, but
maybe a sign-in trade?
I wait and hope.
Okay. And then the other thing, LeBron James, the king. He will be a free agent in just 2 years. Do you wait for him? Do you try to lure him?
I don't think we can lure. Well, LeBron is a huge Cowboys fan.
That's true.
So we might be able to lure LeBron, but I still don't think.
I don't see LeBron coming here.
Here's just thing to note.
We'd have to get Howard.
Back in the day, LeBron said Dallas was one of his teams. LeBron also said that in the free agency, it's not going to be about being on the best team. It's going to be about where he can be for the rest of his career, where he's going to be happy. So
if we get Dwight Howard, we have a legitimate shot at LeBron James.
Right.
But if we don't, we have no.
There's four options, I think, for LeBron. I think he could A, go stay in Miami, B, go back to Cleveland if they make some big they'd have to make some big moves, obviously. C, he goes to the Lakers, especially if they keep Dwight. Or D, he comes to Dallas. I think those are the only four options for LeBron. All right, so that was KETR's Locker Room. We got to end it real quick because this is our show. So I'm Kipper Welch. That was Taylor Phelps and Ryan Billups. This is from your station, 88.9 KETR. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week, Tuesdays at 2 p.m.